Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Okay, yeah. Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, Virginia State Delegate and all-around progressive troublemaker. Very glad to be here with you live from the Center for American Progress. We are doing the show on Facebook. We're trying to get that set up. And so if you want to watch me and not just listen to me, just go to facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. And I'm trying to get this microphone out of my face. I also want to welcome the Progressive Voices Network to the broadcast. They're going to be carrying my show on Wednesdays from 3 to 4. I want to welcome all those new listeners there. We've been on Progressive Voices before, so welcome back. And if you ever miss any of my shows or you want to hear what I've done before, just go to MarkLevineTalk.com because, well, I've had a lot to say about this election. One of the things that I find interesting in this election, and, so I do think Hillary's going to win. I don't want to be complacent. We have to fight hard. The alternative is horrible to imagine. But I do think Hillary's going to win this race. And all you have to do is look at the various demographic groups that she's winning over, right? We have her winning well over 90%, more than 95% of the African-American vote. One poll showed Donald Trump winning zero of the African-American vote, plus or minus 3%. So maybe he's got 3%, or maybe he's got negative 3%. I'm not sure. Latinos are voting in massive numbers for Hillary, obviously, after Donald Trump insulted them so severely. Muslims are voting for Hillary. Jews are voting for Hillary. Women are voting overwhelmingly for Hillary. College-educated people are voting overwhelmingly for Hillary. Now, this is a new thing. College-educated whites used to vote a majority for Republicans, and now they are voting for Hillary Clinton. So my question is, who's not voting for Hillary? Who is Trump still winning over? And the answer, as you can imagine, is rural, uneducated white men. Those are the ones he's winning over in spades. He does better if you're white, better if you're a man, better if you're uneducated or at least not college educated, and better if you live in rural America. So if you are a rural white man without much education or specifically without college education, you're probably a huge fan of Donald Trump. And I want to talk about that population today because this isn't a population that Democrats should neglect or ignore. It's true that many of them support Donald Trump for racist reasons, but it's also true that many of them feel left behind and are suffering by the nation's economy, by globalization, by the death and dying nature of manufacturing in America. And I firmly believe, and I think Hillary Clinton firmly believes, we need to look out for all Americans of any kind. I'm very concerned about red America versus blue America. In fact, I think one of the things that most inspired us to love Barack Obama back when he gave that initial convention speech in 2004 was that he talked about people playing Little League in blue states and gay families in red states. He talked about that we were all one America. In fact, that's our slogan, E Pluribus Unum. And yet increasingly I find, and I believe you find, that we live in two different silos, two different alternative realities. We don't watch the same TV shows. We don't watch the same internet sites. We don't listen to the same radio stations. We really barely talk to each other. Red America and blue America, we don't live next to each other. Blue America tends to be in cities and more suburban areas. Red America out in the country and rural areas. We have different races. And increasingly, we are becoming yet again divided. I don't know. I mean, we're not as divided as we were during the Civil War, but we're heading in that direction. We're heading in the direction of people having alternative truths, alternative realities. Democrats, for example, respect science. Science says climate change is real. We believe it. Scientists say it's the hottest summer on record was the 2016, and the second hottest summer on record was 2015. We believe scientists. Republicans, well, I wouldn't say Republicans, we'll say Trumpists, because there really are two Republican parties right now. We will call the establishment wing the, we can call them the establishment Republicans. And then there's the Trumpists. Who are the Trumpists? We've done lots of radio shows on this. The Trumpists are kind of an outgrowth of what used to be called the Tea Party. They are the party that's most anxious, most fearful, the ones to whom racist appeals are most likely to succeed, the ones who are most fearful of immigrants, whether it be Mexicans or anyone else. And they're the ones generally who are the least educated and the least wealthy in the Republican Party. Now, I understand why the Trumpists feel deserted by the elites in the Republican Party. After all, the establishment wing of the Republican Party has never looked out for them. They haven't made college more affordable. That would help them. They haven't pushed for broadband access in rural America. That would help them. The establishment has mostly pushed for tax cuts for the rich, not tax cuts for working class people, which would help rural America. When it comes to health care, right here in Virginia, there's hundreds of millions of dollars that the President Obama has set aside that the Affordable Care Act, which the Republicans derisively call Obamacare, it's sitting there waiting to serve the rural poor, to serve all the working class people, middle class people in Virginia. Republicans refuse to accept the aid. They refuse to accept the money just sitting there. They would rather their own constituents die than get help by a program that none of them voted for. So if they need health care in rural America, again, the Democrats have the answers. Unions protect working people. Whether it be in rural America or urban America or suburban America, the decline in unions has harmed working people. So working people see, Republicans see that the establishment wing of their party has supported trade deals and globalization and things that take manufacturing out and hasn't done things that would help them, health care and education, all the things, frankly, that Democrats support. But they can't support Democrats because that's the party of the blacks and the Mexicans and the women and the gay people and all the other people that are not rural white men and that rural white men have looked down on for centuries in America. They won't work. Poor white men won't work with poor black men and women to make America a better place. And I want to think about why that is and what it's like to be from that side of the table. And in fact, so much so that I'm going to be going down to West Virginia personally. I live in Virginia. I live in Northern Virginia. I live in Alexandria, Virginia, a very highly educated, very liberal jurisdiction in Northern Virginia. We in Northern Virginia are the reason why Virginia is blue. I'm proud to say that our strength, our progressive strength is the reason. I mean, Virginia used to be voting Republican and did for decades, ever since, you know, Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and he signed racists over to the Republican Party. When the Civil Rights Act was signed, all those Dixiecrats, all those conservative Southern Democrats became conservative Southern Republicans. And Virginia stayed that way until, well, Northern Virginia, the suburbs of Washington, D.C. have grown and grown and grown with a very diverse populace, a very educated populace, and we're the reason why Virginia is now going to vote for Hillary Clinton. We're not a solid blue state, but we're indigo blue, I like to say. We're 52%. We're a state that's in the middle but slightly leaning toward blue. That's because of, well, where I'm from, Alexandria and Arlington, Fairfax County. I'm going to be going in just a couple weeks to Clarksburg, West Virginia, a small town in West Virginia that happens to be the hometown of Stonewall Jackson, the Confederate Civil War general. This is about as red America as I can think. It's 93% white. It's not a very wealthy city. These are people who are suffering. and they are in a very red part of an extremely red state. West Virginia, just, you know, down the road from me, well, a couple hours, maybe 4 hours, from Virginia itself, was a blue state as recently as 1988. They voted for Michael Dukakis over George Bush Sr. Not that many states did, but West Virginia was one of them. They were a solid working-class Democratic state. So what happened in West Virginia? What happened to red America? What happened to working-class rural white people so that West Virginia is now one of the reddest states in the United States? See, I don't think Democrats should give up on rural America. I don't think we should write them off. Where I represent in the House of Delegates in Virginia, we got one person from Roanoke, which is a city, one person from Charlottesville, which is a college city where University of Virginia is. And other than that, nobody west of the Northern Virginia, Richmond, Hampton Roads line. All the cities are on the East Coast except Charlottesville and Roanoke. And so all of our Democratic districts are in one of those three places, Northern Virginia, Richmond, Hampton Roads area, except for these two islands. Nothing in the Southwest, nothing in Appalachia. And I think it's because Democrats are not looking out for rural America like we should. I'm reminded that Lyndon Johnson, the same president that signed the Civil Rights Act, also focused on a war on poverty and also focused on rural electrification. He's the guy that made sure these rural communities had access to electricity and running water. Broadband internet is the 21st century equivalent of that. And I think that red America can believe in government aid again, can believe that infrastructure can be built by their government and supported by it, and we Democrats need to lead the way. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Sorry to the Facebook audience. That's a new thing that we're trying to do here and still trying to get that all set up and working. One of the people complained that I must have East German equipment, and there may be some truth to that. Any case, welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm talking about red America and blue America. And there was a really powerful article that I read in a very unlikely place. The article was in National Review. Now, that's not a magazine I typically pick up. It's the, I guess, establishment Republican magazine. It is the conservative magazine, much like the New Republic was for liberals. And, you know, it was William F. Buckley's place to be. So this is not a place where you ordinarily find a lot of progressive thought. But there's a very provocative article there by a new author whose name is J.D. Vance, who's the author of a book called Hillbilly America, or something like that. My computer's restarting, so I don't have the exact title in front of me. But he gives what I think is the most persuasive case I've heard for how to get in the mind of the rural white voter, the Trump voter, the people who are not going to believe anything I tell them, or probably anything you tell them, because we're seen almost as the enemy to them. He tried to explain the people of West Virginia, who, like I said, I'm going to be visiting in a couple weeks. Mid-September, I'm going down with a Swiss television crew that wants to focus on the difference between red America and blue America. And here I am, a gay Jewish guy from Northern Virginia, from Washington, D.C. suburbs, going out to West Virginia, not very far in distance, but incredibly far in ideology, to talk with these Trump supporters and try to find out what makes them tick. Anyway, J.D. Vance persuasively discusses what it's like to live in rural West Virginia. You used to have jobs there. You used to have manufacturing jobs there. And now you don't. You used to have good farming jobs 100 years ago, at least decent jobs for subsistence farming, and now you don't. And to the people of West Virginia, which is a 93% white state, all these benefits they're not getting, they assume that blacks and Mexicans and immigrants are getting in spades. Now, that happens not to be true. Black unemployment is still higher than white unemployment, and educational levels, and certainly in terms of wealth, the average black person still lags way behind the average white person. But these aren't average white people. These are poor white people. These are working class people struggling hard to do the same thing that their ancestors always did. These aren't descendants of white Southerners that owned slaves. This isn't the plantation class. These are the people who fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War. I've long talked about the 20 Negro rule. This is an obscure historical thing that I truly doubt you saw in your textbooks, but if you Google it, you'll find out that I'm right. This was the rule during the Civil War that said that if you had 20 slaves, if you were a white man and you owned 20 slaves, you're a rich plantation owner, you didn't have to fight in the Civil War. You could stay home on your plantation drinking mint juleps and making sure that your 20-plus slaves didn't revolt against their master. Meanwhile, the three-quarters of white Southerners who did not own slaves went and fought in the deadliest war in American history and died for the right of other people to enslave other people. Poor white people fought and died for the right of a few rich white people to dramatically mistreat black people. And I guess because they wanted to feel superior to those slaves. But they suffered a lot too. And I want to talk about poor white America, rural white America, and how we as Democrats reach out to them. Because if you read J.D. Vance, he talks about how hard it is for someone, a kid from West Virginia with very little money, to get into college and to work out Stafford grants and all these complex loan things that no one helps them with. And they assume that blacks and Latinos and so forth are getting into college easily. That's not true, but they assume it. And they say, why aren't I getting my chance? And then something racist comes out of their mouth. Well, the answer is in Hillary Clinton's plan, right? The one she worked out with Bernie Sanders. If you make under, I think it's $100,000, or maybe it's $125,000, well, whatever it is, you make under certainly what these people make, you get to go to a state college for free. That would dramatically change rural America. Do they not believe it? Have they not heard it? Can she not promote it more? This would change their lives. Medicaid expansion. On this show, I had a conversation with a man from Kentucky who hated Obamacare. Poor guy, lost his job in the manufacturing plant, lift tobacco rails for a living. And this guy, I showed him that in Kentucky, he could get access to health care. I remember him, Gary. He did a whole show as I persuaded him that this was actually something he should try. Called me back a couple weeks later to tell me that he was a big fan of the president. He gave him health care for the first time in his life. This is Mark Levine, 888-488-MARK, right back after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress and on Progressive Voices Network. And I think we're working on Facebook now. Yay. Play that hallelujah music. Hallelujah. Thank you, because this was hard to work out. But hopefully we got it now, and you can actually see me as well as hear me for those of you on computer, though the lighting's bad here. But hey, what are we going to do? I want to get to the calls. We're talking about red America, blue America, and specifically what Democrats should do for red America. See, I'm not willing, even if Hillary Clinton wins in a landslide, and a landslide in America these days would be 55%, I don't want to neglect the 45%. I want to understand who they are and see how we could reach out to them. And the vast majority, and we know this because, hell, heck, Trump won the primary. It's not the establishment Republicans we need to reach out to. It's not the people who want to end regulation so that people can dump toxins in our water and in our air. It's not the people who don't believe in climate change. It's not the people who want tax cuts for the super rich. It's not the people who want to basically take American jobs abroad and outsource like Donald Trump does. Billionaire justice, right? That's what Donald Trump has. They aren't the majority of you in the Republican Party. No, I think that the majority of the Republican Party today, the Trumpists, are people who, yeah, okay, they're racist. They're certainly not college educated, most of them. But they are suffering. And we have to reach out to all Americans. We have to listen to them and hear what they're suffering from. And I think things like rural broadband access, better access to college education and vocational school education and cheaper health care, actually applying of the Affordable Care Act to the red states. We can recreate the Franklin Delano Roosevelt coalition. Am I a dreamer? Yeah, well, I probably am. But we'll get to the callers. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to Linwood in Virginia. Hey, Linwood, line four, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Mark. Thanks for asking me.
Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you. We talked last time about the election and so forth, but I'm glad you brought this subject up about Red America, Blue America. Well, you know, we already know what this is. But you guys have tried this. This is a failed attempt once again. White America, particularly rural white America, is never going to listen to you because they have already sucked on the glass cocaine bottle on the ideals that the rich white guys are for them.
But Linwood, hang on. It to me, the Tea Party and even the Trump revolution shows that they're not believing that establishment Republicans are for them. I don't think when we're talking about Trumpist America, rural white America, not talking about the establishment Republicans, you know, sitting in New York City or wherever. I think they understand that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell aren't looking out for them. They're going to the wrong place, in my view. They're going to Donald Trump, which I think is the wrong place. But I don't think they think that rich Republicans are looking out for them.
50-60% Republican every time. They're not going to cast a ballot for the Democrat because, excuse some of the language I'm going to express, the Democratic Party is for the niggers and the sticks and the dukes.
Okay. Well, we're gonna just cut out that language so that people but I get your point. You're saying that their racism will trump their economic
exactly.
Okay, but here's my point. I agree with you that that's happening now. All right? I don't disagree with you. We agree on the problem. I think, and this is why I brought up the 20 Negro rule from the Civil War. I think rich white, whether they be plantation owners or bankers, whomever they are, the Republican establishment has purposely turned poor whites and poor blacks against each other and have done so successfully for centuries. Okay, this is not a new problem. Yes. That's why I brought up the Civil War. And I agree with you that the Trumpist voters no longer trust and this is why we have a big deal. They no longer trust the establishment Republicans anymore. Now, they still don't trust us. They don't trust us Democrats. They don't trust, you know, blacks and Latinos and people of different races and religions and immigrants. I get that. But my point is this. They're already being divorced from the establishment Republicans. And so I see this as an opportunity. And I agree. Okay. I'm a dreamer. I admit it. Okay? I'm a dreamer. I like to think big. But it seems to me that the more people get to know each other and reach across the red-blue divide, the more we can make common cause with our neighbors who, let's talk about racism, okay? Let's be really blunt about it. Racism is learned. No child is born a racist, okay? This is something learn. They're taught it. They're taught it from their parents and their grandparents and maybe their teachers and maybe, who knows, maybe their church even. But they're taught to be racist. And one of the things that I've discovered in my life, and I'm, you know, I'm a gay Jewish guy, so I'm as far from the red state ideal as can be. But what I found is that the best way to fight prejudice is for people to get to know each other. One of the things we succeeded in the gay community, really successful, was just coming out of the closet and letting people know, hey, your neighbor's gay, your cousin's gay, your lawyer's gay, your florist is gay, your school teacher is gay or lesbian or bisexual, transgender, and you always liked them before, and you still like them now.
So why not? Why you dislike him now?
Exactly, and the same is true. You know, when I meet people who've never met Jews before, and they talk to me, and suddenly a lot of the stereotypes go away. The problem we have is that poor blacks and poor whites don't live with each other very often these days. Segregation is still a major problem. It didn't end with Brown versus Board of Education. And it's not just socioeconomic segregation. In fact, I think you'll find in the upper middle class neighborhoods, there's probably more integration. Upper middle class blacks live near upper middle class whites with not that much problems these days. The problem is that the rural white people of West Virginia don't live near the rural black people of Mississippi. And frankly, the rural black people of Mississippi don't live near the rural white people from Mississippi. And they're both poor, and they're both dirt poor, and they're both suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to encourage people to get to know each other. Now, I'm not going to say that we're going to solve all this problem and suddenly sing Kumbaya and do so by November, okay? I'm not crazy here. I understand that we're trying to overturn hundreds of years of history. But that just because the task is really, really hard to do does not mean we shouldn't start trying. And one of the things I want to show rural white America is that things they are looking for, education and health care and jobs and wages, higher wages, minimum wage, unions, these are democratic principles. A lot of country people, they love the environment. They live in the environment. They hate the city. They love rivers and streams and trees. Go ahead.
You have another problem.
Yeah.
Here's another problem you have. You make all that sound so sexy and sweet, but here's a $10 million problem. You got too many people at the Democratic table, and this is another issue that's been going on, the reason why Donald Trump is playing the card of appealing to black voters on the idea that Democrats have pimped our vote. You have a big problem. Because now you're trying to get rural white folks to come to your table. You got Mexicans, you got gays, you got everybody eating off the table that black folks built. And so when black folks come to the table, what's going to be left for them? You don't have a major
Linwood,
problem here.
Linwood, Linwood, see, you are talking about America as if it's what economists call a zero-sum game, as if there's 100 cookies on the table. And everyone gets their share, and if the blacks get more, the whites get less, and the Mexicans get less, and the gays get more, and I don't see it that way. That's not. I think we can all get a share and all do well. At the end of the day, you know, it may take a century, but to go and live Dr. King's dictum, where we are judged by the content of our character, that is the goal. And so this idea, and I think you find it in all communities, frankly, in America, too many communities, left and right, black and white, and all over, this idea of, I want my share, and we're all trying to divide up our share, rather than say, hey, it takes a village, which is, of course, Hillary Clinton's famous words. It takes a village to raise a child. Let's reach out to everyone. Let's reach out to blacks in the inner cities and to white people in rural Virginia. Let's reach out to all. I mean, we all could use, for example, a more inexpensive college. That would help everybody. That's not a white or black thing. That's an equal opportunity thing. So I think that too many sides, on all sides, left and right, use this rhetoric of, I want my share, rather than saying, how can everybody be helped? And that, I think, is the ultimate goal, and I think we have to start talking that way and not write off groups of people, even though they're racist. Because, to me, racism, again, is a learned thing, and it can be unlearned. You find the same white people who angrily protested the integration of schools in the 1950s and 1960s, the ones that Time magazine showed their faces just bent out of rage because some 7-year-old black girls go into school. And you'll find 50 years later these same people apologizing and saying, I don't know who I was then, and I'm a different person now. I mean, for all the talk about Hillary Clinton said her mentor was Robert Byrd, who was a member of the KKK in the 1940s, well, Byrd was a member of the KKK in the 1940s, and he apologized for it in the 1960s, and he spent 50 years trying to help fix the damage he caused. So I just don't think most people are beyond the pale. I believe that people are redeemable, And I just like I don't think criminals, most of them, are beyond the pale. When they come out, I want to give them a job and give them a rights. And that's why I really like what Terry McAuliffe is doing to restore felons' rights in Virginia. But everyone is redeemable except for the most vicious murderer. OK, so there's a tiny, tiny percentage that aren't. I just don't want to be the I got mine, Jack. To me, the I got mine, Jack, that's Republicans' way of thinking. That's conservative way of thinking. Give me all I can get and forget the rest of the world. I got mine, Jack. I'm going to help my family, and the rest of you can just die. That's Ayn Rand. That's Paul Ryan. That's dog-eat-dog, brutal world. And I think we progressives have a different vision. We have a vision where all of us work together in a community, and I think rural white America shares in that vision. They just haven't been brought into it.
Every time y'all get to Congress, y'all lose it in 2 years. Y'all can't govern with the crap.
Now, wait a minute, Linwood. All right? You're right. We got Congress. We lost it in 2 years. Let's think about why that happened. All right? Because it happened with Bill Clinton, 92, lost it in 94. It happened with Barack Obama, got it in 2008 and lost in 2010. The reason why that happened is because of the voters. You can't blame the people in office. They are chosen by the voters. We, the people, are in charge. And we have a real problem, we progressives, in that we vote every 4 years well, which is why I think Hillary Clinton's going to win this election. Okay, we're good quadrennial voters. And then we don't vote a year, 2 years later. So we lose the 2010s and the 2014s. And I fear we're going to lose 2018 already. I fear it. I think we'll do well this November, and then all those people will say, okay, I've solved the problem for 4 years, and not enter the voting booth. We've got to get progressive voters coming back every election. And in Virginia, as you know, Linwood, there's an election every single year. My job depends on 2017. The governor's job depends on 2017. Then there's 2018. There's the midterms. And you know what, friends? Let me tell you something. If you're tired of waiting lines in those presidential elections, I'll tell you a little secret. If you vote in the off years, the lines are much shorter. You get in and out like that. It's easy to vote. It's crucial to vote. But I don't think, Linwood, you can blame the politicians for people not voting. I blame the people. People need to vote every single year. Is that fair?
Here's what I'm blaming. Here's what I am blaming. You got.
Hold on. You're fading out, and I do want to hear what you have to say, but your phone is fading out. Oh, Linwood, I was about to hear your masterful words. I'll tell you what, let me take a break. Oh, hold on. Linwood, let me take a break. I want you to see if you can call in on a better line, because I do want to hear what you have to say, and I want to encourage others to call in as well. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this, and we'll get Linwood on a better phone line.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, talking about red America and blue America. There's a wonderful article in a very unusual place. It's in the National Review. But hey, you know what? I believe in reading information from wherever it makes sense. And if it makes sense in the National Review, it makes sense. It's called Race Relations Going Nowhere. I have posted it on my Facebook page. It's by J.D. Vance, the author of Hillbilly. I'll get the full thing when it comes out. My computer's slow. But it's about the view from Red America. We have to understand where the Trumpists are coming from. And I don't think... So they're racist. I get it. And I'm not trying to in any way discount that. But at the same time, I think we still need to understand where they're coming from. Because I don't think racism, like anything else, is unchangeable. I think this is something that... we can work on as Democrats and change people's minds. And wouldn't that be great? He's the author of Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis. And the article is in the National Review, Why Race Relations Got Worse, You can find it from my Facebook page, or I'll post it on my website at marklevinetalk.com. Phone number, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Old Faithful, Michael from the Bronx on line two. How are you, sir?
Hey, what's up, Mark? And I'm vacationing up right now in Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Nice.
But, thank you. I have a feeling, based upon what we've seen in this past year and the ongoing rhetoric from Mr. Trump, that it's going to be more red states turning into blue states. I sense a big landslide in favor of Hillary. And, it's, you know, people can be so critical of Hillary and making all this one lie after another, repeating after Trump and the far right wingers. But what it's going to come down to is people either voting for Hillary because they're voting for Hillary, or they're voting for Hillary to vote against Trump.
I hear you, Michael. And I've done lots of shows defending Hillary because I do think she's been very unfairly attacked. But in terms of the landslide, I do think she's going to win. I do hope it will be a landslide. I really want us to win the Senate. And in a real landslide, which I think is going to be hard to do, you know, we got to win by 7, 8, 9, 10 points to maybe pull out the House of Representatives, because of the gerrymandering. You know, just winning by 1 or 2 points won't do it. But even though, and even if Hillary wins in a landslide among women, a landslide among blacks, a landslide among Jews and gay people and Muslims and immigrants and Latinos and Asians and educated, college educated people, and I think she can win all those groups, she's still going to have trouble. She's going to lose. I don't think there's any doubt. She's going to lose among rural white men who are not college educated.
Look at this, Mark.
And what I'm saying is this: I don't want to write anyone off, even a racist. I don't want to write them off. I want to think of ways we can reach out to this community and persuade them that yes, there is a role for government in helping you succeed, whether it be college or internet access or healthcare.
Well, I must say that there are white men that are in favor of Hillary.
I'm one of them. But I'm also college educated and gay and Jewish.
Exactly. But the thing is, you got to put together the minorities, the people of color, the women, and all the other people that Trump has definitely ticked off. I mean, the numbers are stacked against him. And when you say about rural white men, it becomes a small percentage compared to the others that have a very negative view of him, and it's including moderate Republicans saying, like, you know, I have never expected my party to go in this direction.
Yeah, well, no, we're going to get a lot of Republican votes. I think Hillary will get some Republican votes. But my point is a larger one, though. I think there is a tendency among those of us, we liberals, we progressives, to write off the Trump supporters that are uneducated. They believe in this monster. They're racist. They're misogynist. They have problems with women. They have problems with immigrants. That may all be true. I'm not even saying it's not true. But what I'm saying is that let's not write them off as people, as human beings, because the more people get to know each other, the more people see smart, intelligent, competent women running things, the more people meet white and black together and break bed and play games together. And, you know, the more people get to know their gay neighbors or Jewish or Muslim, I think this animosity goes away. So really this is an appeal to end the segregation, end the wall, tear down this wall between red America and blue America. Don't build it. Tear it down, because I don't want to be two Americas. I want to be one United States of America, to quote a certain President Obama.
Yep, and you're absolutely correct, Mark. I would not write them off either. But they need to do a lot of deep soul searching in their hearts and know the true meaning of working together.
Okay, but Michael, it's not going to come by them suddenly seeing the light and saying, I was wrong all along. We have to have a little bit of humility here. We have to reach out
to
them. We can't be like, you know, we know the truth and you don't. Now, that happens to be true. We do know the truth and they don't. But when you say that, that sounds really awful. So you got to say, hey, tell me about your kid and how much trouble he's having getting into college. Tell me about your mom and the trouble she's having on the healthcare system. Tell me why you can't find a job in rural America. And let's see how we can work together and help one another. This is Mark Levin. It's the Inside Scoop. Thank you to my Progressive Voices listeners. You can find more information at marklevinetalk.com.